Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, September 18th. I'm Hannah Floor. Petersburg hosted its fifth ever middle school cross-country invitational last weekend, with more than a dozen kids from CAKE making the trip across Kuprinoff Island. It's the first of two cross-country meets this fall for the Midcoff middle schoolers. KFSK has the story.
Okay, here we go.
It's just before 9:30 on a Saturday morning. 16 middle school girls tow the starting line on Dolphin Street in front of Petersburg's elementary school.
There'll only be two commands, and that's going to be runners to your marks, and then the gun will fire.
The girls from CAKE are in red, Petersburg Vikings in black.
Runners to your marks.
Ahead of them, a 2.1-mile course. The first half mile takes runners up a slow incline to a network of trails through the Muskeg, then back down to the northernmost point of Midcoff Island, along the water, and finally up a long, slow, unkind hill to the finish line. It's the fifth Petersburg Invitational since 2016, when the middle school running club shifted to become a competing team. But it's the first time for the CAKE runners. Coach Anthony Ross says he's excited they're getting some competition.
We compete ourselves against ourselves every day, you know, but have that extra competition really goes a long way, especially athletes. You know, and just to see other communities as well, too, kind of broaden their culture, broaden their horizon a little bit. You know, it's great for our kids, great for our students.
And he says he's not really worried about that hill at the end.
We're kind of used to that hill. The girls are a little humble. You know, we finish on a hill every single day.
Less than 15 minutes after the gun goes off, the first runner appears way down North Nordic Drive.
Oh, there they are. Holy cow. Let's go.
It's 7th grader Aria Holmgren running for Petersburg.
I don't know. I have a mic.
There's nobody on her tail, but she doesn't slow down as she closes in on the finish line. After she catches her breath, Holmgren tells me she just focused on what was ahead of her as she ran.
I was just thinking, just look forward, keep on going. It's okay if you get third or last. It doesn't matter. At least you try your best.
She has straightforward goals when she's running.
Get in front, try to do my best, and then cheer on my teammates or help, like, cheer on CAKE, the other team.
Petersburg Activities Director Jamie Cabral likes to cheer on the other team, too. That's CAKE's Cadence Pageant, fourth place finisher. After the race, I ask him about it.
I noticed that it seemed like you were cheering on the CAKE girls by name.
Yep.
Did you learn their names?
I learned their names, yeah.
Cabral says he reached out to CAKE's coach and a whole bunch of coaches around Southeast, trying to get as much competition as possible for the Midcoff middle schoolers.
You know, we don't have the luxury of going on a bus and just driving up to another school and running, so it's all logistically challenging, but worth it for the kids.
We head back to Dolphin Street for the boys' race.
I'm excited for this one because that race was really competitive with the girls. I think this one will be just as competitive.
So the Vikings should be a little bit worried.
Maybe just a little, but they've been working hard. Coach Joe's got them ready.
Okay. That's Coach Joe Vicknicki. And Coach Joe does have them ready, huddled near the starting line.
Two, three. Go Vikings!
All right, have a good race.
The boys line up.
Runners, take your mark.
This time, it's not much more than 10 minutes before we see the speck of a Viking runner climbing the long hill.
Go, Joe!
8th grader Joe Hofstetter flies across the finish line, knees high, with a time just shy of 12 minutes, 40 seconds.
Did you think that you were going to win?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. Thought I was going to beat the record, though.
Did you beat the record?
No.
Hofstetter has been training hard this season.
So your dad says you get up at 5 in the morning every morning to run?
4. Yeah. I really love running. I used to hate it, and then I learned to really like it.
He runs again in the afternoon with the team. He says it does take a lot to fuel all that running.
Granola, and yogurt, spaghetti, bread.
As we talk, more runners cross the finish line. Petersburg 8th grader Camden Johnson finishes second, half a minute after Hofstetter.
Let's go, Camden!
Followed by 5 more Vikings in a row. At the end of the meet, Coach Vicknicki says he's proud of the kids, but he's not going to take it easy on them.
Practice will get harder from here, right, girls?
Vikings standing nearby, grimace.
We just ramp up our intensity through the month and build our muscles. I know, they're looking at me like, what are you talking about?
This is not what I signed up for.
Ignicki says the team has a meet in Craig at the end of the month, where they'll also compete against Kloak. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Floor.
Volunteers with the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary help maritime communities across Alaska stay safe on the water. But leadership says membership has fallen off in the last few years. Some auxiliary groups have dissolved. It's been about a decade since a new group has been chartered in Alaska, but that streak was broken last week when 14 Petersburg residents revived the community's auxiliary. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has more from the swearing-in ceremony.
Procedure-wise, what are we going to do? We have a new member. Derek, would you step forward?
Coast Guard Auxiliary Commodore Marion Parrish is swearing in Petersburg resident Derek Lopez at the end of the town's drive-down dock.
I'm going to read this to you. The pledge you're about to take is support the United States.
Lopez is one of over a dozen residents who are being honored today for beginning their service to the town's new Coast Guard Auxiliary Group, which is called a flotilla.
Congratulations.
And there's no lack of fanfare. Right behind them, the Coast Guard's two Petersburg-based vessels, the buoy tender Elderberry and Cutter Pike, are docked bow to bow. And they're flanked by a group of active-duty Coast Guard personnel, auxiliary volunteers, community members, and visitors from far and wide. Desi Burrell is one of the Petersburg Flotilla's founding members, and she's been the driving force behind recruitment. She says the way things all click together and even the sun breaking through the clouds to shine down on the ceremony feels a little bit like divine providence.
Made it even more special. And that they were all in town on this glorious, beautiful day, and that setting was...
District 2 House Representative Rebecca Hemshute is among the group of spectators. It's September 11th, and she says the significance of the day isn't lost on her.
It occurred to me while we were there, watching everybody, you know, these 14 amazing volunteers saying we can do something to improve conditions for them, improve conditions for the folks who are doing all the hard work in Petersburg with their vessels. And those 14 people are doing this swearing in on 9/11, on what I consider a very a day that causes all of us to pause.
And the reasons Petersburg residents are joining the flotilla are as numerous as they are, from making sure local mariners have access to dockside safety exams, to helping out with search and rescue operations, to just having an outlet to stay out of trouble. Stephanie Payne directs Petersburg's Parks and Recreation Department. In that capacity, she's held several outdoor safety classes for local youth. She says she joined the flotilla to bring more marine safety education to kids in Petersburg and in neighboring communities.
Like, there's no reason to not do this. It was an honor. It is so, I don't know that I have words for it, really, to just be part of it and to be able to help and do what we can.
The energy at the event is high, but that doesn't capture the whole picture. Marion Parrish is Alaska's Coast Guard Auxiliary Commodore. He says auxiliary membership is dropping off pretty much all over the map. A new flotilla hasn't been inducted in the United States since before the pandemic. And for Alaska, it's been over a decade.
But I don't know why. And society's just different. I also recognize that young people, there's an expense involved, there's time involved with kids and everything. It's very difficult. Very difficult to carve out time. But if you look at Petersburg here, everybody in the flotilla is super busy to begin with. So that excuse kind of falls apart a little bit.
And as it turns out, there's no rest on the horizon for Petersburg's chronically busy auxiliary members. Some are already getting booked out for dockside exams on commercial fishing vessels and scheduling safety classes for kids in Petersburg and in neighboring Wrangell. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Fall is fast approaching, and that means peak fishing for certain species on Prince of Wales Island. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says that the summer salmon runs for pink and chum salmon on the island are dying down, but mid-September is prime time for fishermen on the hunt for coho in freshwater streams. The king salmon fishery on Prince of Wales Island closed at the end of last month, but will reopen on October 1st. Fish and Game also says that this period of time, when many species of salmon spawn upriver, means that the streams and rivers are full of rainbow trout, cutthroat trout, and Dolly Varden. They feed on salmon eggs. Area biologists also report that halibut stocks near Prince of Wales Island have been good this year, and they expect anglers will be able to continue catching them in the coming months. daily bag limit for guided fishing in the area is one halibut. There is also a one-a-day bag limit for lingcod and slope rockfish on Prince of Wales Island, which biologists say congregate in the rocky depths during the fall months. All common rockfish species near Prince of Wales can be caught year-round. Bartlett Regional Hospital's Rainforest Recovery Center is permanently closing next Tuesday. Hospital leaders say the decision was made following several staff resignations at the Substance Misuse Treatment Center. This comes as the hospital faces a major budget crisis. As Clarice Larson reports from Juneau, some city leaders were shocked by what they felt was an abrupt announcement.
Bartlett Regional Hospital has operated the Rainforest Recovery Center for over two decades in Juneau. It's a 16-bed, high-intensity substance misuse treatment facility located on the hospital's campus. The center has allowed Juneau residents and others in Southeast Alaska to access treatment faster without having to travel to places like Anchorage or Seattle. But this spring, the hospital shared that the center, along with a handful of other services, was draining money and contributing to a financial crisis that could close the hospital. In June, the hospital's board of directors agreed that if it can't secure subsidy money or find a third party to take over the program by the end of October, then it would be eliminated. But late last week, the hospital shared with staff that the center would be closing much earlier, by next Tuesday.
Rainforest is open through the 23rd. We're actively discharging patients due to staffing shortages in the program.
That's Joe Warner, the hospital's chief financial officer and soon-to-be CEO. He explained the decision to the assembly at a meeting Monday night. Some members, like Christine Wall, were taken aback by the news. Earlier this month, the assembly discussed and indicated support to give the hospital $500,000 toward continuing the program through next June during a finance committee meeting.
I hear the comments about not having enough staff in this current moment. If someone could walk me through how we got from not having enough staff in this current moment to closing the program permanently, that would be helpful.
Warner says since June, nine staff members at Rainforest have resigned. Kim McDowell, Bartlett's chief nursing officer and chief operating officer, says that's in large part due to the uncertainty of the program's lifespan.
I think that when you have any period of uncertainty, especially for staff, they have to make what decisions is best for their families. People decided that they needed to move on and look for different work.
Without enough staff, McDowell says it puts patients at risk. The center currently has four patients, but they will be discharged before Tuesday. McDowell says one will finish their program before then, and the three others will go to seek treatment elsewhere. Rainforest Recovery isn't the only treatment center in Juneau. Gastineau Human Services is a nonprofit that helps people affected by homelessness or addiction. Jonathan Swinton is the executive director of Gastineau Human Services. He told KTOO on Tuesday that it plans to partner with the hospital to expand its 19-bedroom substance misuse treatment program in the coming months. The program opened last year and plans to have 27 beds by early next year.
We're in discussions right now with Bartlett to contract with them to provide an increased level of medical assistance to the residents in our treatment program, with the goal being that those in need in the community will still get the level of service that they have been through Rainforest program.
Rainforest Recovery's impending closure comes after the hospital closed its crisis care unit in July. It was a program designed to offer immediate care to adolescents in crisis. The hospital had only started offering the service last December. Hospital leaders say the closure was due to a lack of funding and staff. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Alaska's U.S. senators split their votes yesterday on a bill that would provide federal protection and guarantee insurance coverage for in vitro fertilization. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins of Maine were the only two Republicans to vote in favor of advancing the IVF bill. 44 Republicans, including Senator Dan Sullivan, blocked the measure. Democrats want to show that they are the party that backs IVF. The procedure allows tens of thousands of couples a year to overcome fertility trouble and have babies. IVF is controversial among some conservative abortion opponents because it typically involves creating more embryos than can be implanted and carried to term. A spokesperson for Sullivan says the senator supports IVF, but the bill had unacceptable elements that raised concerns over religious liberties. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Flohr.